Hey, Richies, did you miss us?
And if you didn't, how dare you?
But this week, we have a surprise for you, so hopefully that'll change your mind.
That's right. So you might have heard that there's a new Hulu documentary about the fallout at Liberty University dropping soon, as in today.
Mm-hmm. But as your trusty gossip fiends, we've already got the inside track. Last year, our special Even the Rich miniseries, In God We Lust, covered the whole messy story. And now we're bringing it to you.
In God We Lust tells the story of Jerry Falwell Jr. and his wife, Becky Falwell, members of one of the richest and most powerful evangelical families in America. Jerry is the son of Reverend Jerry Falwell Sr., and until he resigned in August of 2020, Jerry Jr. was also the president of Liberty University, the evangelical college his famous father founded.
So why did Jerry Jr. resign? Well, it turns out that despite Liberty's strict rules of conduct based on religious doctrine, Jerry and Becky were a little light on the religious devotion.
Exactly. Their torrid affair with a much younger pool attendant led to a love triangle, a shady business deal, and a tabloid scandal that exposed the hypocrisy behind one of the nation's biggest political machines and threatened to bring down the Falwell family dynasty forever.
I mean, good riddance, if you ask me.
Same.
On In God We Lust, you'll hear directly from students at Liberty what it was like to attend a school they thought shared their beliefs and how they experienced the fallout. And you'll also hear from Giancarlo Granda, the young man at the center of this story.
This week, we're bringing you the first two episodes of our six-part investigative series as a little, how do you say, amuse-bouche.
That's how you say it.
Love it.
But we do want to warn you that as juicy as this story is, it also deals with some pretty difficult topics like homophobia and sexual assault. So please listen with care.
Yes. And as usual, there will be swear words.
Enjoy.
It's Halloween at Liberty University. The air is crisp. The leaves on the trees are bright yellow and orange. And pumpkins line the dorm room windows. Arisha, what was Halloween like at University of Maryland?
Frat guys dressed up as Freddy Krueger, drinking jungle juice and throwing up on their girlfriends.
Okay, wow, that's really specific. Do you want to talk about it?
Nope, that's all I have to say about it.
Okay, well, at the Liberty University campus in Lynchburg, Virginia, the students love to celebrate Halloween too. It's a big deal. Take a listen.
This is the tale of Scaremare.
Scaremare?
9 fun-filled days in October where students dress up as lions and tigers and bears and clowns with machetes and terrify visitors walk through the wooded campus trails. They even produce a little video to promote it.
But it's true. And those kids, they were never seen again. And the creatures, they're still out here on this property.
Okay, that does sound scary.
Yeah, anything with clown laughter is bone-chilling. Anyway, Scaremare 2013 has a theme, how Jesus takes on the cares of the world. It all leads up to Halloween night, where students dress up on campus. One student, though, can't join the fun. Leaquan McLaren is working a shift at the computer lab on campus. But it turns out, on Halloween, even the computer lab's bumping.
Some people are studying, but a lot of people are just, like, having fun, you know, hanging out with each other.
When all of a sudden, Laquan hears a huge commotion out front.
And I was nervous at first, like, oh, man, is this another flash mob?
It's a surprise appearance by the president of Liberty University and his wife, Jerry Jr. and Becky Falwell. And they're dressed up. You want to guess what they're dressed as?
A pot and a kettle?
I love that, but no. Leaquan goes to see what the hubbub's all about.
I go look, and Jerry has these circular hippie glasses. He has some sort of, like, scarf or something on his head. And it's very clear, like, he's wearing hippie, baggy clothes, whatever. And then Becky's wearing, like, you know she's Dorothy, but it's slutty Dorothy that you would see at Spirit Halloween.
Wait, like Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, but her checkered Dorothy skirt is short. Like, really short.
I'm not saying that to participate in the culture of slut shaming, because I don't agree with that. But I'm just using it as a descriptive word. She is wearing something that makes you go, wait, is that Becky? Is she really wearing that?
Lee Kwan is so shocked to see Becky dressed as, quote, slutty Dorothy, that he decides to document the moment.
I went over and I took a photo with them, and I remember looking at it afterwards and sending it to my friends and being like, did y'all see what Becky's wearing?
And Lee Kwan notices something else about them.
It's very clear that they were not sober. It was the talk of the campus for the following days, if not, you know, week or two afterwards.
Because ever since Jerry Jr. took over from his famous dad as the president of Liberty, it's become increasingly clear that he and Becky play by their own rules, not the chaste rules of the Liberty way. And while in 2013, a lot of their shenanigans are still very much a secret,
like the affair with Giancarlo,
students on campus are starting to notice the hypocrisy.
And all of these girls, like my female friends, were irate because they had been getting so many points written up and having to pay fines for wearing leggings or for just different clothes that they were wearing that were apparently inappropriate according to the Liberty way. And here was Becky just like wearing whatever she wanted around campus.
On other campuses, this wouldn't have been a big deal. But the founder of Liberty University, Jerry Falwell Sr. and his wife, would never have been caught doing something like this. Now, don't get me wrong. Jerry Falwell Sr. had his faults. He was a controversial guy in a lot of ways. But Jerry Sr.'s faults were very different from his son's. And when Jerry Jr. finally takes over, he'll chart his own path. Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay, well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh yeah, the Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss. And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com.
We know you have your tried and true closet staples, but it can be fun to switch it up. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada.
Yeah, it's easy to find instant inspiration at Saks.com. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch.
Okay, well, obviously this is making me just want to shop after we record this.
I know, and it doesn't take much for me wanting to shop. No. So. But if you're looking for a joyful shopping escape, which we all are,
yes,
then head to Saks.com for inspiring ways to shop for everything on your agenda.
Saks.com. From Wondery, I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams. We're the hosts of Even the Rich. And this is In God We Lust. This is episode 2, Liberty or Libertine.
Okay, Arisha, what do you know about Jerry Falwell Sr.?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay. Well, you're not the only one, but there was a time in America when almost everyone knew who he was. Let me take you back. Imagine. It's early on a Sunday morning. It's the late 1960s, and you're 8 years old.
Okay. Playing with my Chatty Cathy doll. Got it.
Yep. Your parents are still asleep. You sneak into the den and sit down on the shag carpet and reach over and turn on the TV. They didn't have remotes then.
Pontiac GTO for 66.
You're flipping around looking for cartoons.
It's time now for the Old Time Gospel Hour with Jerry Falwell, pastor of the Thomas Road Baptist Church in Lynchburg, Virginia.
But instead, you stumble on a show called the Old Time Gospel Hour. There's a church choir singing. And then a guy talking.
Ye are of God, little children. And have overcome them.
And talking.
He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth not.
And talking.
How can you know the difference between what is right, what is wrong, what is truth, and what is error? How do you know who is preaching the true gospel and who is preaching another gospel? The spirit of truth.
That's Reverend Jerry Falwell Sr.
Someone may have knocked on your door peddling a book or a piece of literature. You may have heard of someone.
Jerry Sr. grew up during the Depression in the small town of Lynchburg, Virginia. And according to him, his dad was most definitely not a church-going man.
My father was never in a church in his life, as far as I know. And his father before him was an atheist.
Jerry Sr.'s father had a very cool name, Cary Hezekiah Falwell. He owned gas stations across 16 counties, restaurants, and bus lines. He even built a dance hall called the Merry Garden, where every weekend night, up to 1,000 people could pack in, looking for some good swing music, a fun night out, and some booze.
Okay, Cary Hezekiah Falwell sounds fun.
Yeah, word was that during the Depression, he was a bootlegger. But he was also an alcoholic who was said to have shot his own brother and ultimately died of liver failure.
Okay, that took a sharp turn.
Yeah. His son Jerry followed a very different path in life.
And I was studying mechanical engineering in college when, as a result of hearing a radio broadcast, I heard the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Young Jerry heard that radio show, and he didn't want to go into the hospitality business like his old man. He transferred to Baptist Bible College and started preaching. Jerry Falwell opened a little church. Its first meeting was inside a schoolhouse in Lynchburg.
Okay, I gotta say, Lynchburg is a really unfortunate name for a town in the South.
Yeah, it really is. And it isn't a coincidence. Supposedly, the town's founder's brother is the guy who gave lynching its name. So, yeah, not great.
Hashtag rename Lynchburg.
The Apostle Paul said, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ."
Reverend Falwell grows his little Lynchburg congregation from a few dozen families to hundreds of congregants. They move to a bigger building, and from there, they just keep growing.
Okay, so I'm looking at pictures of the Reverend Falwell from around that time, and can I just say he looks exactly like you'd imagine a Southern preacher would look? I mean, he's wearing a snazzy suit and tie, and he's got this perfect brown helmet of hair and this huge grin.
Yeah, definitely. And Jerry Sr. is ambitious. He probably wants to be like that preacher he heard on the radio as a young man. He wants his evangelical message to reach beyond just the confines of one little town. So in the 50s, he starts broadcasting his Sunday morning services, first over the radio and then on TV. He preaches from the pulpit at Thomas Road Baptist Church.
It was just this really big auditorium. I mean, that was mostly what the church itself was.
Mary Beth Baggett was a student and years later a teacher at Liberty University. She lived in Lynchburg for years and remembers what Falwell services were like back in the day.
A big choir area for the choir to be, the big stage where he would sit. The choir director or the worship leader would have a lot of musical performances. The spectacle really is, I think, the best way to describe it.
Now, thousands of churchgoers are packing into Thomas Road every Sunday, sharing the pews with the camera crews who are beaming it out across the country. And Jerry Falwell Sr. is at the center of it all.
Just a really big personality, commands attention, a booming voice. There's just something kind of about him. He's very charismatic.
There is a church of Satan in the world today. Men and women belong to it. Exorcism is not fantasy, it's real. The devil is a real person with real powers. And then you can go on and talk of the spirits of modernism and liberalism. A good rule of thumb is, if it is new, it isn't true. If it's true, it isn't new.
There are a lot of people who like this message. Jerry Sr. becomes big not just in Lynchburg. He's one of the first big televangelists and a true national celebrity. His family's growing too. He and his wife, Maisel, have three children, two boys and a girl. They buy a lake house outside of town where they spend their weekends. When the kids are little, Jerry Sr. tries to be home every night to put them to bed with a Bible story and a prayer. Their mom quits her job at a bank to stay home and raise them. As Jerry's public stature grows, with visits to the White House and preaching all over the world, Maisel is basically a single mom at home. But the Falwells say he's still a devoted dad. They tell a story about a time that he canceled a meeting with the president to get home for one of the kids' birthdays. One beautiful Saturday afternoon, Jerry Sr. piles his young kids into their old family station wagon for a weekend drive. His son Jonathan once told the story during a church service.
And my dad would drive us out to maybe get a hot dog, and then he would drive up into this big field, and we'd get out of the car, and he would begin to walk around the property, and he would pray.
Little Jonathan has no idea why they keep driving out to this big empty field in the middle of nowhere to pray.
And I remember one time I asked him, "Dad, what are you doing? Why are we here?" And he just simply said this. He said, "Because I believe what Joshua chapter 1 verse 3 tells us." So when God was speaking to Joshua, when they were about to enter into the promised land, as they were about to cross over the Jordan River into the land that God promised them, God told Joshua this, "Be assured that everywhere the soles of your feet will tread, I will give to you if you remain faithful."
I'm not up on my Bible verses. What is Jerry Sr. talking about?
Jerry has a dream to build a school where he can spread the gospel and train the next generation of evangelicals. This empty field with tall grass everywhere, this is Jerry Falwell's promised land.
And he said, "I'm praying that God gives us this land so that we can build a university that will change the world with the gospel."
In 1971, Jerry's prayers are answered. Here he is in a Liberty promotional video.
"We're standing here on Liberty Mountain. We're standing on the ground that for 3 years we have prayed that will one day be the site of greatest Christian school in the world. We believe God gave us this mountain for that purpose."
On that mountain in Virginia, Lynchburg Baptist College is born. Well, sort of a mountain.
It's called a mountain, but it's really like a hill. But you can kind of look over and see the rolling hills and things, the mountains kind of out in the distance.
Mary Beth Baggett says Jerry Sr. always seemed to do it all.
He would speak at chapels for the academy. He would speak at chapels for the university. He would go to athletic competitions. I mean, he was extremely involved.
The first time Mary Beth met Jerry Sr. was in 1989 when she was working as a waitress at a local restaurant called Shakers.
He really was extremely likable, extremely personable, treated waiters extremely well.
But even though he was seen as kind of this big teddy bear around Lynchburg, Jerry Sr. could be controversial, even hated by other people.
He has a negative public persona, and I get it. I get it. He really did say some questionable things, and he, you know, there were a lot of negative things.
For one thing, the private grade school academy he founded, he started it as a whites-only school because he was strongly against racial integration in the South.
Oof.
Yeah. And by 1980, Reverend Falwell has started getting even more deeply into national politics.
"I'm cussed and discussed by a lot of my dear friends for violating, they say, the principle of separation of church and state. I don't believe in violating that principle. I speak as a private citizen, and I don't think I must forfeit my citizenship because I happen to be a Christian minister."
He doesn't believe in the separation of church and state. At least, not anymore. He starts a group called the Moral Majority.
The most pretentious name for a group.
Yeah. It's founded on four basic principles. Pro-life.
Against abortion.
Pro-family.
Which basically means anti-LGBTQ rights.
Pro-moral.
I don't even know what that means.
And pro-American.
Translation, America was founded by whites and Christians.
In the 1980 presidential election, Falwell decides to back Ronald Reagan, a once-divorced former Hollywood actor, over Jimmy Carter, who's an actual evangelical. And Falwell's decision is absolutely key in helping rally conservative Christians to Reagan.
"If we will not be governed by God, we must be governed by tyrants."
"I do indeed agree with Mr. Reagan's motto, a new beginning. I think that's happening in our country. I'm not speaking at this point from the political perspective, but as a minister of the gospel."
Reagan defeats Carter.
"For those who've abandoned hope, we'll restore hope and we'll welcome them into a great national crusade to make America great again."
While Reverend Falwell's national stature grows throughout the 80s, Falwell's two sons grow up inside the liberty bubble that their dad created. Jonathan and Jerry Jr. both go to their dad's private academy and then to their dad's university. Instead of gas stations and dance clubs, the family business is now religious education and conservative politics. And one feeds the other. Get this. Liberty builds a shrine on campus to the memory of all the aborted fetuses since Roe v. Wade in the shape of a tombstone.
Jesus.
Yeah, he's there too. Liberty University is graduating hundreds of evangelical preachers who spread across the country to preach the gospel. One of Jerry's kids even becomes a minister himself. But it isn't Jerry Jr. It's Jonathan Falwell, who follows in his father's minister footsteps.
So I have different stories about specifically Jonathan, and I feel a little guilty because Jonathan, I think, is different now. From what I understand, he really went through a major life change, but waiting on him was not as pleasant as waiting on his father was, which is a lot of complaining. And I think a lot of entitlement in terms of just, you know, do you know who I am kind of thing.
Meanwhile, Jerry Jr. turns out very different from his dad in a lot of ways.
Falwell Sr. was so extroverted, so outspoken, hard to ignore. Falwell Jr. was kind of this shrinking violet.
Jerry Jr. is painfully shy, awkward. He probably couldn't imagine getting up in front of the kinds of audiences his dad commands every Sunday. When he's 18, Jerry Jr. meets a 13-year-old girl named Rebecca Tilly.
Becky.
Yep. And they become friends. She's also from a conservative family. Her grandfather owned a tobacco farm in North Carolina, and her father was a businessman. And it turns out that her family gives a lot of money to Liberty University. 5 years later, they start dating when she's a freshman at Liberty University and he's a second-year law student at UVA. Jerry and Becky seem to really love each other. Which is a good thing, because Jerry will later say Becky went to college to get her MRS degree.
That is the only reason women go to college.
Yeah, I now go to get a BAR degree. It's much easier. But even if she's a good girl from a good family, Jerry's mom, Maisel, does not approve of Junior's relationship with Becky. She thinks that because Becky's family is from North Carolina and not Virginia, that Becky will be too country for her son. Maisel wants Junior to marry someone glamorous, like the women who appear on the old-time gospel hour, which, from watching these videos, seems to mean women with big hair and pearls.
Okay, so Jerry's painfully shy, he's not going into the ministry, and he's dating a girl his mother doesn't approve of. So is he kind of like the black sheep of the Falwell family?
You could say that. I mean, his mom tells him they won't pay his law school bills if he keeps dating Becky. But Jerry's not going to let his parents' disapproval get in the way of his relationship. So for the next 2 years, he lives off his personal savings. And eventually, Jerry gets down on one knee and proposes to Becky. Before the wedding, though, the Falwells are caught up in a major scandal in the evangelical community.
We begin tonight with one of 1987's most widely covered news stories, the sex and financial scandal that destroyed Jim and Tammy Baker's television ministry called PTL, or Praise the Lord.
The phones are ringing off the hook at Thomas Road Baptist Church. The reason? News has broken that televangelist Jim Baker allegedly raped a church secretary several years earlier and then paid her hush money to cover it up. Now, reporters are calling Jerry Falwell Sr. about it. Jerry Falwell Sr. and Jim Baker are close. Baker was part of the group that started the Moral Majority. And just before the news broke about Jim Baker, Baker had asked Jerry Sr. to take over his ministry and TV show, the PTL Club. And it turns out, by accepting leadership over Jim Baker's church business, Falwell's stepping into a big old mess. More people come forward with accusations of Baker's sexual impropriety, and the FCC launches an investigation into whether PTL defrauded viewers. Then the IRS comes knocking. The whole thing shatters people's trust in the televangelists, as immortalized forever by Saturday Night Live.
Hello again, I'm the church lady, and this is Church Dad.
Oh my God, I loved the church lady.
As you all know, our world of television ministries has been rocked by scandal. Who are these people? Responsible Christian broadcasters or greedy media sluts? You be the judge.
Donations to Jerry Falwell's show, The Old Time Gospel Hour, dry up. And it's a reputational black eye for Reverend Falwell. and it won't be the last one for him or for his family. So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen, and you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started. When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals more easily and still have the occasional treat.
Exactly. And Chime's here to help you do that. With a Chime checking account, you can make financial progress with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe or getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit.
Yep. So if you set up direct deposit into your Chime account and use an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance.
And I love that Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion.
My God. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/rich. That's chime.com/rich.
Chime feels like progress.
Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details. The fall of 1987 is a dark time for Jerry Falwell Sr. He and the other leaders at Liberty are trying to figure out how to deal with the growing fallout from the Jim Baker scandal. But amidst all this, October 3rd is a happy day. Friends and family of the Falwells gather in a little white chapel with a white spire on the roof on the Liberty University campus.
Ooh, are we going to a wedding?
Indeed we are.
So I'm imagining Jerry Jr. is dressed in a tuxedo and Becky's in classic white.
Yeah, it's a small, traditional, private wedding. The couple walks up to the altar. Reverend Falwell officiates.
Wait, so does that mean the Falwells came around on Becky?
Yeah, I guess so.
I can see it now. Do you, Jerry, promise to take Becky to have and to hold for richer and for poorer, but mostly for richer? Do you promise to share the carnival menage a trois dessert with her and Giancarlo equally, not eating more than your share of the funnel cake portion, but also not eating less?
Okay, that's enough. I wish he said that, but that's obviously not what Jerry Sr. said. After they're married, Jerry Jr. and Becky move to a farm outside of town. They have two boys and a girl, just like his parents. Jerry Jr. starts practicing law. He becomes the head lawyer for Liberty. Jerry also starts a side business in real estate, buying and developing dozens of properties. He and Becky live what you could call a nice country club lifestyle. Meanwhile, his dad keeps running Liberty. Just 6 days after Jerry and Becky's wedding, Jerry Sr. resigns from Jim Baker's ministry. After that scandal, they eventually end up shutting down the Moral Majority. But Falwell will keep running his Liberty empire for years, well into the new millennium, and controversy will continue to follow him.
That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers.
A couple of days after 9/11, Jerry Sr. goes on TV to share his thoughts about why the U.S. was attacked.
I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
And overnight, Falwell becomes the preacher who kicked his own country when it was down, who said that God let 9/11 happen to punish us for our sins.
It was such an awful thing to say.
Oh my God, so awful. And for Jerry Sr., a PR nightmare. He would later say he misspoke, but the damage is done. And just like the Jim Baker scandal, his hateful words sure don't help fundraising. This time, he turns to his more business-minded son, Jerry Jr., to help. In the past, Jerry Sr. would have relied on telethons or multi-week fasts to raise money. But his son has a better, easier way to raise money: real estate. Jerry Jr. starts selling off properties from Reverend Falwell's business empire, and it does help give Liberty some more access to cash. And while he's at it, he picks up some things for himself. Two small parcels of land Liberty owns. Jerry builds a strip mall on one of the parcels. Then years later, he sells it for 8 times what he paid for it. Jerry says his business partners paid fair market value for the property and invested a lot into it before selling it. And then, in 2007, the final reckoning comes for Reverend Falwell.
I was actually standing outside the mansion.
Tyler Lee was a freshman at Liberty University.
And the police had blocked off the driveway to the mansion.
That morning, Jerry Falwell's wife, Maisel, had been looking for him. He had missed a meeting and was nowhere to be found. She calls his assistant of 17 years, who sends someone to check his office at Liberty. The door's locked. When they finally get inside, Jerry Falwell Sr. is unconscious.
There were ambulances and nobody knew what was going on. It was just strange.
Jerry Falwell Sr. is dead. So many people come to his funeral at Thomas Road Baptist Church that they have to set up multiple overflow locations on campus to handle all the attendees.
There were a lot of prominent figures. I remember Franklin Graham speaking.
People have asked me, Franklin, did you agree with Jerry Falwell? Every time he opened the Bible, I agreed with Jerry Falwell. And you know what? He opened the Bible a lot, didn't he? I thank God for him.
There was a representative from the Bush White House.
On behalf of all of us in the Bush-Cheney White House, please know that we are holding you up in prayer, that we hold the Falwell family in very high regard.
It was a sad time because he was the face of Liberty. He was a large public figure. People loved him, people hated him, but the students loved him, obviously.
Tyler Lee was only a freshman when Falwell Sr. died, but still, he remembers him fondly.
He was known as a prankster around campus. I mean, he'd put people in headlocks, and he just loved to cut up, and it was all in fun.
The school has lost its biggest star. Reverend Falwell's two sons don't have the same charisma or star power, and the school still needs money. Dealing with Liberty's financial issues falls to Jerry Jr. But it's clear right away that Jerry Jr. is not his dad.
At the time, he was total opposite, right? He loved to work behind the scenes. He was quiet.
Tyler helps organize the school's convocations each week, so he'd see Jerry right before he had to go on stage in front of the whole university.
He was known to wear Crocs, so he had on his suit and he had on Crocs. Crocs were big at the time.
Truly the worst piece of footwear ever to have been created.
Agree. And Jerry Jr. is still a terrible public speaker, and he hates it. He and Becky had been private citizens for 20 years, and suddenly they're in this public spotlight they never anticipated. Someone close to them told us the whole thing was stressful and traumatic.
I remember him just being shy and nervous. He was awkward. You go from this very private life to all of a sudden you're thrown into the limelight overnight. And so, you know, he probably would have run from Vine Center that day if he could have.
Okay, so he may never be a smooth-talking, charismatic preacher, but it turns out he's a pretty good executive. He builds a leadership team, cuts costs, finds new ways to make money, and as a part of that, he finds a little program deep in the university that he realizes could have a much bigger impact than it's having right now.
In the mid to late 80s, Liberty started the distance learning program. This was before the internet. And so they mailed out VHS tapes for classes for people that weren't residential students.
A video mail service for people who want a Liberty University education but can't get to Liberty University. When high-speed internet takes off in the mid-2000s, Liberty transitions to online education. And when Jerry and his team take over, they decide to go all in.
And so Liberty saw this boom in the online program. And so they just started raking in all this capital.
Like, we're talking serious money, Arisha. We're not talking VHS tape money anymore. In 2007, before Jerry Jr. takes over, the school has about $150 million in assets. 5 years later, under Jerry's leadership, the school's assets surpass $1 billion.
It's unheard of. It takes schools hundreds of years to do what they did in about 5 years.
Liberty Online courses are a game changer. They're one of the first universities to offer them. Liberty's Board of Trustees even issues a letter thanking Jerry Jr. for literally saving the school. Almost overnight, the leadership's problems go from how to pay debts to figuring out how to spend all that money. Liberty starts making the campus like Disney World.
We built the Snowflex, which is the artificial ski slope. I've snowboarded in shorts up there in the summertime.
And that's not all. They build an equestrian center, a tennis pavilion, an Olympic pool, a skate park, a ski chalet.
What, no space station?
Yeah, seriously. The first Jerry Falwell wanted Liberty to become the country's largest and most prestigious university in the world for evangelicals, what Notre Dame is for Catholics. Under his son's leadership, that vision is becoming a reality. And Jerry Jr. actually becomes beloved on campus in his own way.
The students would sort of treat him like a mascot almost, you know, maybe saw him as like the fun uncle.
At one basketball game, he's caught on film crowd surfing. He becomes a better public speaker, even if he's still known to put his foot in his mouth pretty often.
I've got a video of Becky when she was 9 months pregnant with Trey in a bathing suit driving a big tractor. And I'm going to show it right now. You didn't really think I would show it, did you? But it's maybe I will someday, but she's just trying to scare her a little bit.
Jerry and Becky are starting to live more like the heads of a billion-dollar business that they are. They're going on lavish trips and flying in private planes. They hire a student to be their personal trainer. And a year after Tyler Lee graduates, the Falwells help him start a frozen yogurt franchise.
It was colorful. We had pink and green and yellow colors and blue, and it was just fun. I mean, kids loved it.
Jerry's son, Jerry Falwell III, who everyone calls Trey, is part of the yogurt shop business too. Trey also just graduated from Liberty. The lines between Jerry and Becky's personal life and their roles as the school leaders are starting to blur. And then, in March of 2012, Jerry and Becky take a little trip to Miami Beach, where they meet a young man working as a pool attendant at the Fountain Blue Hotel.
You mean their rendezvous at the Fountain Blue? Sorry, I've been waiting 2 episodes to say that.
I wish you would have waited forever. Jerry Jr. may be different from Jerry Sr. in a lot of ways, but their lives start to mirror each other too, especially when Jerry Jr. decides that, like his old man, he's going to get more involved in conservative politics.
I think we need a Trump Tower or two here on campus, don't you?
Because just 6 months after his and Becky's first encounter with Giancarlo, a different kind of politician shows up on campus.
You know, I used to love going to Sunday school. People don't know this about Trump. They think,
oh. Giancarlo's on campus with the Falwells the day Donald Trump comes to speak.
But the truth is, I went to Sunday school.
It will set off a chain of events that will cause the Falwells' personal life and their politics to collide.
Gronda remembers that when Jerry introduced him to Trump in the green room behind the stage, Jerry describes Gronda as our friend from the Fontainebleau.
That's on the next episode of In God We Lust. From Wondery, this is episode 2 of 6 of In God We Lust, a series about the allure and perils of sex, wealth, and power.
To hear more stories about family dynasties, scandals, and fancy people, check out the series we host, Even the Rich, where we've covered everyone from Jay-Z and Beyonce to Britney Spears to the Versaces to Jackie Kennedy.
The Falwells and Giancarlo Gronda declined to be interviewed for this series. A lawsuit recently filed by Liberty University against Falwell alleges that Jerry Jr. covered up Becky's affair with Giancarlo. In God We Lust is hosted by me, Brooke Ziffrin.
And me, Arisha Skidmore-Williams. This series is written and reported by Maeve McCorin. Produced by Chris Siegel. Fact-checking by Natalie Robimed. Our managing producer is Lekha Punya. Audio assistance by Sergio Enriquez. Sound design by James Morgan. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, George Lavender, and Marshall Louis. For Wondery.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers.
hunt for muddy puddles and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.